We are going to continue with the first Mishnah of Pirkei Avos. We're getting close to the end of that Mishnah and almost ready to start a second Mishnah. I have two more points that I want to speak about. One still on the phrase, Hamidu Talmidim Harbe. The second thing that the Anshei Knesset Hagdola said was to raise up or stand up many students. We explained already many aspects of that. But I just want to mention now another one, the importance of teaching Torah to others. And teaching Torah to others does not necessarily mean in a classroom. But all Torah that someone learns, the purpose of it is to give over to others also, and not to keep it for yourself. The Klausenberger Rebbe explains the Mishnah later on in Pirkei Avos. Im lomadeta Torah harbe. If you learned a lot of Torah, al tarzik tova li'atzmecha. So the simple meaning is don't take credit. Al tarzik tova. Don't take credit for it, or don't think you're a big shot. Hilakach no tzarta, because that's what you were created to do. But he learns a little bit differently. The Gemara says, Ein tova el Torah. The ultimate good is Torah. So therefore the Mishnah means the following. If you learned a lot of Torah, don't hold that good for yourself. Don't hold the Torah for yourself, because you were created to share it with other people. Torah was made to be shared with others. And the Marsha says, that's what the hint is. It says, Adam la'amal yulad. A person was created to toil. And the word la'amal, he says, is notrikon. It's la'amal is lilmod al menas lelamed. Lamed is lilmod, to learn. The ayin man is al menas, in order, lelamed, to teach. Person's learning has to be with other people in mind. In fact, it says that the world is divided into three 2,000-year eras. The first 2,000 years were called the years of Tohu Vavohu. The world was not yet totally formed. That was the years of the Mabul, and they were the years of Tohu Vavohu. Then came the 2,000 years of Torah, and then the 2,000 years of Yemos HaMashiach. Rashi learns that in addition to Torah now is the time when Mashiach could possibly come in those final 2,000 years. And it hasn't come yet, and because we haven't yet been worthy of it. The Marsha says that basically the giving of the Torah ended at the end of the 4,000 year, and that's when the Torah was given completely, all of the oral Torah, whatever, and we just now learn what's been given. And that was around the time of the destruction of the temple. In any case, whatever, when did the 2,000 years of Torah start? So it could have started from Noah. Noah learned Torah. Even other Marishim learned Torah. But it didn't start until the Hanefesh Asher Osu Bechara, when Avraham Avinu went out and influenced others and taught them that there's a God and took them away from idolatry. That's when the 2,000 years of Torah started. So we see from there that until Torah is learned, in order to disseminate to others, that's not called Torah. Torah means to teach, to guide. If a person learns, he has to use the Torah that he has to teach and to guide others. How important is this? So let me tell you something that Rabbi Yaakov Emden says. The Mishnah says later on in Pirkei Avos, Halomed al menas lelamed, a person who learns with the intention of teaching others, maspikin biyado lilmod lelamed. So he is given heavenly aid, heavenly help to teach, to learn and to teach. The halomed al menas lasos, but a person who learns in order to make others do. Lasos means to make others keep the Torah, not just to teach them, but to go one step further and to influence them to actually do what they learn. Then, Maspikim Yada Lilmo the Lalameh, he's given the heavenly assistance to learn and to teach, Lishmor Velasos, to observe the Torah and to make other people observe the Torah. Asks Rabbi Yaakov Emden, what happens to the person who just learns for the sake of learning? It just speaks about the person who learns in order to teach and the person who learns in order to influence people to actually observe. What about the person who just learns for the sake of learning? Says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, that person gets absolutely no heavenly assistance. Why? Because the Gemara says in Psachim that halomeid shelo amanas lamed, a person who learns without the intention of teaching others, is dvar Hashem baza. He is insulting the word of God. And the end of that pasuk is dvar Hashem baza, he kores, ti kores. A person is cut off from this world and the next world. That's for learning Torah without the intention of teaching it. That does not mean that everybody has to be a teacher. And I tell my seminary students and the Rabbonim that I teach, it would be a shame if all of you become teachers. It would be sometimes a disaster. Not everybody is cut out to be a teacher. Not everybody who attends a teacher seminary is cut out to be a teacher. So some people should adopt to not be teachers, to go into something else. But everybody is a teacher. People teach their children. They teach other people's children. We'll see later, there's another way of teaching that a person has to take into consideration. But everybody has a responsibility to share their learning with others, whether it's in a classroom, whether it's in the home, whether it's with neighbors, with people you come in contact with. That's also called teaching. That's also called sharing your Torah with others. If you were zoche to learn and to come to a understanding, then you have a responsibility to share that with others who didn't have that opportunity. And a person who doesn't, obviously doesn't appreciate the Torah. He doesn't consider it something important enough to want to share with others. And that's why I think Reb Chaim Volozhiner says, it says that two people, shnayim, shiyoshvim, ve'ein b'neihem divrei Torah, two people are sitting and there's no Torah between them. Hareza moshav leitzim. That is they are leitzim, scoffers. So he says, not talking with they're not learning Torah. Each one's learning Torah to himself, but they don't communicate the Torah to each other. They don't share what they're learning with the other one. That's a bunch of scoffers. So Torah was meant to be shared, because if it's important enough, and you found that treasure, then why wouldn't you want to share it with somebody else? And if you don't want to, then it's obvious that you don't think it's that important, that you have to share it with somebody else. The Chesed Lavram, the grandfather of the Chidah, Reb Chaim Yosef David Azulay, says the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, another Mishnah, Kol sheruach habrios nocha heimenu, ruach hamakom nocha heimenu. So the normal way of translating that Mishnah is, whoever people like, God likes. And whoever people don't like, obviously God doesn't like. But that's very difficult to learn like that, because there are a lot of people in this world that people like who are really, really not nice people. People like them because they're rich or because they're powerful and whatever. So he learns differently. Kol sheruach habrios nocha heimenu means somebody who benefits other people. He doesn't only keep Yiddishkeit and learn Torah for his own personal purpose, but he benefits other people. He teaches them. He influences them. Cares about them. So then the Rabbanu Shlomo is happy with such a person. But a person who's frum, but only for himself, and is not interested in sharing that with others, then the Rabbanu Shlomo is not happy with such a person either. That's what he says. The Mesillas Yesharim says that a person who merited, being able to some understand the truth of Torah, right, has a chiyuv to teach others and to benefit them also from the truth that he has discovered. The Svarno says that also on another mission in Pirkei Avos, Udelo Yolif Ktola Mechayev, a person who doesn't teach others, a person who has merited learning something in Torah, and he holds it back from other people, doesn't want to share that Torah with somebody else, is liable to a death penalty. That's how serious not sharing your Torah is. And that's what it says, Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'olam. They bring Shalom, Shlemus, they bring perfection to the world. If they were Zoche to a certain amount of perfection, and learning Torah and being able to observe it is perfection. So if you were Zoche to that perfection, you have responsibility to share it with others. Yeah, anybody who has the ability, we'll see in one second what it means. But it doesn't mean only a teacher. It means anybody can share the Torah that they have with somebody else. And the Ralbag says that also. The Ralbag says on the Pasuk, Yoru Mishpotecha LeYaakov, the Levium taught Torah to the Jewish people, and he says that Roy Lechol Sheyesh Lo Chelek MiHashlemios Enoshi, anyone who merited to have some part of the perfection of what a human being can have. He was zoche to acquire that perfection, shiyashlim bozulasa, then he should use his powers to help others and to help them also reach that level of perfection. Because that is the way of the Rabbanu Shalom. The Rabbanu also influences and gives to others. And after a person knows something, he is responsible to give it over to others also. And this is not just for other people's sake, but it is for the person's sake himself. Because part of the perfection of a person is being able to give over to others. How do I know that? The Meiri says that in their time, in the time of Chazal, you gave a hesped to somebody and you didn't know them well. You could say they learned Torah, because most people learn Torah. I don't know if that applies today, but it applied then. But you couldn't say that they taught Torah. In one second I'll tell you what he says, but let me first give you the background of this. In order to give a hesped, the hesped has to be true. You can't just make up things about a person and say a eulogy. For a few reasons. One is, you're not allowed to lie. Secondly, because the neshama hears the hesped. The neshama is there. But it's there from the world of truth. And if he hears lies, hearing lies in the world of truth is like scratching your nails on a chalkboard. That's how irritating it is to the neshama to hear lies. Thirdly, the neshama says, all they can say good about me is lies. There's nothing good to say about me that's true. That also hurts the neshama. So therefore, you have to say the truth. You can exaggerate. In other words, if a person never gave a penny to tzedakah, you can't say he was a benevolent, charitable person. Say something else. Say he had a good sense of humor. Say that he, you know, never spoke Lashon Hara. Don't say that he was charitable. But if you know that he did give tzedakah, you can say he was a very charitable person. Why? Because you don't know. You know that he had that meter. You know he did give tzedakah. Maybe he gave things that you didn't know about. So you can exaggerate. But you can't speak about something the person didn't have that quality at all and say that he did. But if he had the quality, you can say that he had a good portion of that quality, even if you're not sure. So that is a hesped. That is, it has to be true. So I once, in Miami, I used to have to give hespedim for people that I didn't know, because there were many people who were unaffiliated with any kahila, with any congregation when they were alive. They basically were not even religious people. But suddenly, when people die, they become religious. and the family becomes religious. And anything around death, people want to be really machmir and mahadrin. So I many times got calls from the funeral home, could you do a funeral for someone who is not affiliated with anything Jewish, no Jewish, but he stipulated that he wants an Orthodox rabbi to do his funeral. And the family called, they wanted an Orthodox rabbi. So they used to call, not just me, they used to call the Orthodox rabbis, and they paid for this. So it was a mitzvah, and they got paid for it, so why not? So many times I ended up doing funerals for people I never knew, and I have to say a eulogy. And the eulogy has to be true, and it's very hard to get to know people at that point, since they're no longer here. So what I did was I would call the family. If the funeral was the next morning and it was nighttime, I called them the night before and say to them what I just told you. I have to give a eulogy. And could you tell me some nice things about the deceased, your husband, your wife, your father, mother, whatever it was. And they would tell me, you know, things. These were not religious people. They didn't tell me, you know, they learned Shas four times and they were, you know, very medactic in mitzvahs. They told me things like they had a good sense of humor. Fine. So there's a Gemara that says that Eliyahu HaNavi was in a marketplace and somebody asked him, is anybody here for sure a shoo-in to Olam Haba? And he said, yeah, these two people. They are batchanim. They're comedians. And they cheer people up. So having a good sense of humor, is you see the Gemara says is a milah, cheer people up, whatever. They didn't speak bad about people. They supported their family. These are the kind of things. And I had something, you know, for everything, fix it into the Sedra, and that was the eulogy. Or I met with the family right before the funeral. The funeral was going to be during the day, and there was no time to call them. I asked them to come early to the funeral, and I would meet with them before and make up the eulogy that way. I remember meeting with a family once that there was a wife and children and a sister. All these are adults. The man was an elderly man. And I asked them, could you tell me something nice about your father, your husband, your brother, so I can say a eulogy? And there's silence for 5 minutes. Mamish, 5 minutes. And I know what's going on. So then they all look at each other, and they all look at the widow, and she nods her head, and she gets up. She says, Rabbi, there is absolutely nothing nice to say about my husband. And they're all shaking their head, like the kids and the sister, everybody shaking their head. I don't remember what I said at that levaya. I remember thinking the man is very lucky that he's no longer here with a family like this. I do remember that I went home that day and bought my children little presents and candies and told them, remember this. On the other hand, I've been at funerals where people have gone overboard with eulogies. Right? I remember going to the funeral of a very nice person in Miami, very fine, communally minded person, but he was a nice person, but he wasn't, you know, Moshe Feinstein. And the person giving the eulogy made him sound like he was Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? It was, I thinking to myself, boy, I feel bad I didn't really get to know this person when he was alive, because really, he was really much greater than I ever knew. And I thought, you know, really, this is, if I was standing behind the widow, this man's widow. She was standing next to a friend, and in the middle of the eulogy, she turned to the friend and whispered, I think I'm at the wrong funeral. That's not my husband. So then I saw that maybe I wasn't so far off the mark either. So that is a eulogy. Okay, and how do we get onto this? So the Meiri says like this. In the time of Chazal, the Gemara says that you could say with surety that the person learned Torah. Most people learned Torah in the time of Chazal, and if you didn't know for sure one way or the other, if you said a eulogy, you could say the person learned. But you couldn't say with surety that they taught others. Says the Meiri, in explaining that Gemara, many people reach the perfection of learning for themselves. But not everyone reaches the perfection of teaching others. That means that teaching others is not other people's perfection. It's the perfection of the person who teaches. It's bringing out their perfection, right? And therefore, again, you don't have to be a teacher in a classroom. But a person can share his Torah at the Shabbos table. He can share it with his children. He can share it with his wife or husband. He can share it with a neighbor. And even more important is the following. The Medrash says the following. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, Mimedcha HaTorah Derech Eretz. Rabbi Yitzchak said, the Torah taught us Derech Eretz, that when you do a mitzvah, you should do it with a happy heart. Shiyasa mitzvah, have osa osa b'leg sameach. Because if Reuven would have known that the Torah was going to record that he tried to save Yosef, he would have picked him up on his shoulders and run home to his father with him. And if Aaron would have known that the Torah was going to record that when he saw Moshe Rabbeinu for the first time, after he was chosen to be the Redeemer, that he would be happy in his heart that Moshe was chosen, he would have come with a parade. And if Boaz would have known that the Megillah was going to record that he gave some parched wheat to Ruth, he would have given her a banquet. Now, the surface meaning of this medrash is very difficult, because it seems to be saying that if these people knew they were going to get good PR, they would have done the mitzvah differently. Right? If they would have known that the Torah was going to publicize what they did, they would have done it in a much more grander way. But they didn't know they were going to get publicity, so they just did it the way they did it. They can't say that. Secondly, what is the Derech Eretz over here? Rabbi Yitzchak says, the Torah taught you Derech Eretz, that when you do a mitzvah, you should do it with a happy heart. What's Derech Eretz? Derech Eretz is usually between man and man. Doing a mitzvah with a happy heart, where is that Derech Eretz? And thirdly, I can understand perhaps Reuven didn't do his mitzvah with a totally happy heart. If he had, he would have jumped and run back with Yosef back to his father. And maybe Boaz didn't do it with a happy heart because he would have given her a banquet instead of some parched wheat. But it says by Aaron, v'ro'acha v'somach b'libo. He'll see you and he'll be happy in his heart. The Torah says he had a happy heart when he greeted Moshe Rabbeinu. What was missing? By Aaron, the Torah testifies that he had a happy heart. What was missing? What if a parade made better? He had a happy heart. Therefore, I think what it means is the following. The Rambam says that Derech Eretz is a word that has many meanings, but there is a thread that makes all the meanings have a common foundation. What are the various meanings of Derech Eretz? Derech Eretz can mean good midos, good character traits. That's Derech Eretz. Good behavior between people, Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz can also mean commerce, a business. It's called Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz means a business dealings. Derech Eretz can also mean the relationship between a husband and wife. Husband-wife relations is also called Derech Eretz. Hilchas Derech Eretz in the Shulchan Aruch are the laws of intimate relations between a husband and wife. That's called Derech Eretz. What is the common thread between all these things? Says the Rambam, Derech Eretz is anything that promotes a functioning society. Derech Eretz, it's the way of the land, a way to create a functioning society. Therefore, without people, there can't be a functioning society. So husband-wife relationships is called Derech Eretz. It is the foundation of a society. If you don't have commerce and an economy, you can't have a society. So business relations, commerce, is called Derech Eretz. Similarly, if you don't have people functioning one with the other properly, then you can't have a functioning society. That's also called Derech Eretz. Anything that promotes a functioning society is called Derech Eretz. The people do mitzvahs, and they think that it is a very personal, private thing, their mitzvah. But it's not true. Because the mitzvah that you do has an effect on other people, okay? Especially if the Torah publicizes it. Because then every time somebody learned that parasha in the Torah, whether it was the parasha of Reuven, or the parasha of Ara, or the parasha of Boaz, they were influenced by what they were reading. So when the Torah publicized it, it meant that the mitzvah was no longer their individual, personal, private thing, but they were teachers who were influencing others through what they did. Now, when you do something privately for yourself, you do it in a proper way, but that's it. But when you do it to teach others, then you do it in a more demonstrative way. And I always give this example. It's really an anachronism. I don't know why, but I am a creature of habit, and I'm not going to change the example, so I'm going to tell you the example I usually give. A woman wants a kasher chicken. Okay, you probably don't even know what I'm talking about. What it means to kasher a chicken. You get chickens without heads, without feet, that are kosher, and you can eat them. Huh? You know what koshering is? When's the last time you kashered a chicken? 19 what? okay. That's the point. Okay. I'm sure that the younger generation today has no idea what that is. There was a Gioris woman that we converted in Miami, and after her marriage, she came to live here for a year to learn with her husband. She got married, she came to learn, and she had an apartment in Geula, right on the outskirts of Meir Shari. And she went to buy meat on a Friday in a butcher shop in Meir Shari. She walks into this really frum butcher shop, and the butcher looks up to her, he says, kosher or not kosher? She says, just because I look like a Gioris, you're going to sell me non-kosher meat? What kind of chutzpah is this? Right, so called, do you think that, why would you think that I would want not kosher meat? Right, she like, right, got on the defensive, like, you know, does he know I'm a Gioris? And all he meant was, do you want it kosher or do you want to kosher it yourself? Yeah. Kosher or not kosher? But she never heard of this. You buy meat, that's it. In any case, so if a mother wanted a kosher meat, so she soaked it and salted it and rinsed it and that was finished. But if she wanted to teach her daughter how to kasher meat, she didn't just do it perfunctorily. She took the meat and said, here's meat, put it down, right? Said, here, we're putting it in the water, soaking it, right? Everything was done in a very demonstrative way. Here's salt, we're putting the salt on, everything was done, right? Exaggerated, in order to teach someone else. When you do something for yourself, you do it one way. When you do it to teach somebody else, you demonstrate it much more. That's what the Medrash says. If these people would have known that the Torah was going to publicize what they did, then they would realize that their mitzvah wasn't something private for themselves, but they were to be teachers. They were for all generations teaching from what they did. They would have done it in a more demonstrative way. And we learn from there, when you do a mitzvah, you should do it, the Leiv Sameach, not just have a happy heart, but demonstrate, show through your actions that you have a happy heart, because that's what influences other people, that you're happy about the mitzvah. It's a schus, it's an opportunity, it's a merit. That's what it means, that you should do it with a happy heart, not just have. Aaron had a happy heart, but had he done it with a parade, other people would have seen his happy heart. Had Reuven picked him up on his shoulders and run home, people would have seen the happiness in his heart. And the same thing with Boaz. Boaz may have given her that parched corn with tremendous happiness, but if he would have given her a banquet, other people would have seen it. And therefore the Medrash ends the following. V'hayom Eliyahu u'melech ha-moshiach kosvam. Kisvei ha-kodesh, Tanakh is not finished. It's still being written in the heavens. And who knows if we have a sentence there, or even a parasha, or maybe a whole book. Who knows? And later on, we're going to say, well, if we would have known that our mitzvahs are going to be examples for others, we would have done them differently. But you can't say that. Reuven could say that. Aaron could say that. Boaz could say that. They didn't know this medrash. But I told you this medrash. So after 120 years, you're not going to be able to say, well, if I would have known, I would have done differently. You did know, and I will be there to say that you knew. So you can't say you didn't know. So when a person does a mitzvah, he should realize that it's very possible that even if he's in the privacy of his own home, someday somebody's going to learn something from that. People are going to learn from your mitzvah. You're always taking consideration that you're not doing it just for yourself. But a person's a teacher even the way that he does a mitzvah. Who knows who's watching? Who knows who's going to hear about it? And who knows who's going to be influenced by it? There's so many stories of people who are influenced by things that you don't think are important. But to them, it made an impression. It changed their lives. So a person has to realize he's always a teacher. Torah is meant to share, and therefore, a person has to take consideration when they're doing a mitzvah, when they're learning something, that there's always somebody else, perhaps, that can hear and benefit from this, what's it called, the mitzvah I'm doing, from the Torah that I learned. Lilmod amanas olamei, to learn with the understanding that I want to give it over to other people, that I want to teach other people, I want to influence other people. That's part of what Torah is. And therefore, ha'amidu talmidim harbe is not only talking to teachers. It's not only talking to rabbis. It's talking to every single person. But taking consideration that if the Rabbanu Shel Olam merited you with a mitzvah, with an understanding of Torah, with whatever it is that other people don't have, that you have a responsibility to pass it on to others in some way. And if you take that in consideration, then Jews will influence others and be teachers of others and learn from others, and in that way everybody will reach the perfection that they can, each one perfecting the other and perfecting themselves by perfecting other people also.